So thank you so much for your prayers. If you have your notes in front of you, your bulletin, I'm talking in a series with you about how to enjoy the benefits of a successful year. What do we do to enjoy God's blessing? How can we have God's blessing in our life? We started out talking about Joshua chapter 1:8, when they're about to go into the land, and God says to Joshua, "You do these things, and your way will be prosperous, and then you will have good success." Joshua chapter 1:8. So we've looked at some different ways. I think there might be those outlines in your bulletin. The first week we saw that the way to enjoy the benefits of a great year was by glorifying God in all that we do. I've been talking about glory over here, giving them the same definition that I have been giving you, which is, the visible manifestation of one's essence. And how do we do that? 1 Corinthians 10:31 says, "Whether we eat or drink or whatsoever we do, do all to the glory of God." So we can do that in our quiet time. We can do it in our thought life, and we can do it in our lifestyle that we live. Whether we eat or drink or whatever we do it all to the glory of God through our quiet time, through our thought life, and in our lifestyle. And then I talked about living life thinking of eternity. How can you reap that benefit by living life of a great year? You think about eternity, and people say, "Well, that's kind of morbid." No, it's not. It's just starting at the end and working your way back. It's like a maze, you know, when you're a little kid and you go to Denny's or something like that, and they give the little kid the crayons to keep him busy, and there's a maze. And if you've ever seen a little kid that's kind of smart, start at the front of the maze, you always get trapped in dead ends. But if you start at the back of the maze, you can usually figure it out pretty easily. And there's no turning around and going back. And when we start at the end, which is eternity, and work our way back, wow, that's powerful. So how can I reap a benefit of a great year? Is by living this year in light of eternity. We talked all about 2 Corinthians 5, the burden of a sinful world, receiving the down payment of the Spirit, reveling in the immediacy of our appearance with Him, not worrying about death, knowing that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, and reminding ourselves of our accountability to Him, that we will all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. So then... Lastly, by investing yourself in the souls of others. We saw this, I believe, 2 weeks ago, that we invest our souls in the souls of others, the third way. And Jesus says that He came not to be served, but to serve and give Himself a ransom for many, Mark 10:44. So when we invest in the souls of others, we have to ask God's strength to do His will. We have to rejoice in the blessing on others, even if it's not the way we would do it. We're God's blessing, and we're not jealous. We're not envious. And then by following the Master's example of humility, Jesus showed us His example. I preached on Philippians 2:5 to 11 this morning about Christ emptying Himself and taking on the form of a servant and humbling Himself. And being made conformable to death. And these are three ways that we can reap the blessings. As we started this series, these are the three ways that we can reap the blessings of a great year. But then I want you to notice number four. If you're taking notes with me, I think Seth is following along, and he'll stick it up on the screen. The fourth way, and we'll have some subpoints today, is by investing yourselves by giving to that which can never cease. So number one, we glorify God in all we do. Number two, we live life thinking of eternity. Number three, we invest ourselves in the souls of others. And then fourthly, by giving to that which can never, ever cease. And our text is found in Matthew, Matthew 6 and verse 19, it says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasure on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. I often say this to people. You tell me what the one or the first or second or third biggest checks you write in a month, and I will tell you probably where your heart is. Because where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be as well. Where we place our treasure. One of the biggest checks we write every month, one of the largest checks we write, is to Littleton Baptist Church, to the work of the ministry at Littleton Baptist Church, for missions at Littleton Baptist Church. It's our first or second biggest check every single month. Not food, our house payment, and our giving to the Lord. Those are our two biggest checks in the month. And because we prioritize giving to that which can never cease. And Christ tells us that we're not to lay up for ourselves treasures on earth. That doesn't mean that you don't set aside for retirement. That doesn't mean that you spend every penny that you have and you don't have anything for savings in case of an emergency. That's not what Jesus is teaching. But he's talking about hoarding. He's talking about being greedy. He's talking about thinking that I can manage it all and I don't need God's blessing on my life. Jesus' response to that in verse 20 is, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Henry Emanuel and Mayer Lehman. These eventually became known as the Lehman brothers. Henry Emanuel and Mayer Lehman. The Lehman brothers were really well known. If you're looking at the slide, I think Seth is putting it up. That was the Lehman Brothers building before their famous bankruptcy in 2008. They actually had two buildings. One of them is on 1 William Street, and which is very, very famous. And then their more modern bank. Let me just tell you a little bit about the Lehman's, because what an amazing company they started. But it ended in a dramatic fashion. I think most of us are old enough to remember on September 15, 2008, when Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy. They had $639 billion in assets, but $619 billion in debt. And there was no way they could cover their debt. They had the heirs of these men, the economic heirs of these men, had created derivatives in which they bet that they couldn't lose on the housing market. And what we found out in 2008, 2009, that the people giving out loans in the housing market were giving them with no proof of income. And when it all started to go south, it was like a bunch of dominoes falling. Lehman's bankruptcy was the largest in history. Its assets far surpassed those of previous bankruptcies like WorldCom and Enron. Lehman's was the fourth largest U.S. investment bank at the time of its collapse. Fourth largest. It had 25,000 employees worldwide. Lehman's demise also largest victim of the U.S. subprime mortgage-induced financial crisis. Lehman's collapse was a major event that greatly intensified the 2008 crisis and contributed to the erosion of $10 trillion in market capitalization. $10 trillion were lost in the global equity markets in October of 2008, the biggest monthly decline on record at that time. But let me take you back and talk about this company, because we're talking about giving to that which can never cease. And this company was built, and nobody ever thought it would go bankrupt. It started in 1844. A 23-year-old Henry Lehman, the son of a cattle merchant, immigrated to the United States from Bavaria, from Germany, northern what is now the southern Germany. He settled in Montgomery, Alabama, where he opened a dry goods store. In 1847, his brother Emmanuel came, and the firm became H. Lehman and Brother. With the arrival of their youngest brother, Meyer Lehman, in 1850, the firm changed its names to Lehman Brothers, and that's what we knew it as for the next 158 years. Lehman Brothers became a member of the Coffee Exchange in 1883, and finally the New York Stock Exchange in 1887. In 1899, it underwrote the first public offering, the preferred and common stock of the International Steam Pump Company. It survived Great Railroad Crisis of the 1880s, two World Wars, the Great Depression, Korea, Vietnam, the inflation of the 70s, significant competition, but could not survive its own greed. They got greedy. And they destroyed investors' wealth. Lehman's leaders took a 160-year-old company down, and with them went many other companies, all because they invested in the wrong places. I can remember that taking place. Back in 2008, 2009, we were in the middle of trying to build our building, and Tri-City had swaps to protect us against in interest rates going up and down on our loan. We had swaps with Lehman Brothers, and when Lehman Brothers went under, it put tremendous pressure on our ministry. We had done nothing wrong. We were paying all of our bills, but it put tremendous pressure on our ministry as to how we were going to go through that difficult time period. And it was all because other people invested in Lehman Brothers, and Lehman Brothers invested in the wrong people, and they all got greedy, and it took everybody down. They invested in that which was able to be destroyed. If we're going to reap a harvest of great reward from God this next year, we give to that which can never cease. So I'm going to give you three ways or three places that you can invest. I'm just going to tell you some stories today, give you some scripture verses, but three places that you can invest. And I'm not just talking about money. I'm talking about time. I'm talking about prayer. I'm talking about encouragement. There's all kinds of ways that we invest in something that cannot cease. So number one, we invest in God's church. We invest in God's church. In Matthew chapter 16 and verse 18, so to God's church, if you're taking notes with me, the A here would be to God's church. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 18, Jesus says to Peter, and I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades, the gates of hell, shall not prevail against it. So let me tell you a couple things. Number one, Peter has just confessed, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Peter's name in Greek is Petros, which we get rock. Another name for Peter's name is rock. A rock is Petros. And he says, you are Peter. And Jesus kind of does a word play and says, on this rock. Now, some will tell us that Peter is the rock. That's not what Jesus was saying. Jesus was saying that the confession of Peter, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Upon that confession, on that truism, on that belief that Christ would build his church on the truth that he is the Christ, he is the Messiah. And then he goes on to say, on that confession, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And a lot of times we think of of the gates of hell, of, oh no, you know, the church is being attacked. It's just the opposite. A defending army has gates. The attacking army doesn't carry its gates with us. The point is, we are attacking hell. We are attacking the gates of hell. We are on the offense. Satan is on the defense. It may seem like, wow, the world is against us. Culture is against us. Satan's against us. Everybody's against us. We need to get in our little huddle and oh my goodness, everything is going wrong, and oh, it's so terrible. We're just going to huddle together until the rapture, until we die, or whatever. And it's That's not what Jesus was saying. Jesus says, we are on the offense. We are on attack. That hell has gates, and the gates of hell cannot stop. Cannot stop the church. One of the famous illustrations of this was the French humanist and atheist Voltaire. And Voltaire is said to have said that in his life he would destroy Christianity. And many years after he died, it no longer is still doing that, but many years after his death, his home was bought by a Christian organization. And for many years, they published Bibles and printed Bibles and mailed out Bibles from Voltaire's home. And he said, I will destroy Christianity in my lifetime. No, the gates of hell never will stop the church. The church goes wherever Satan is greatest. In Iran, there's great revivals. In China, there's great revivals. Places where Satan is trying to destroy the work of God, God's church continues on and does great things. The gates of hell can never prevail. I put up a picture of a dear friend of mine. We actually have, because of a donor in my past, when I told him we were going to start having young men in our ministry going to seminary, going to college, and we're helping them go through school. And even some of us, some of you in the church have taken this as an extra thing to give to. It's the Jerry C. Tetrow Scholarship. That's a picture of Dr. Tetrow. Dr. Tetrow was my principal in high school. And then when Tri-City started a Bible college and Elman and I graduated, so he is signature on both Elman and my high school diplomas. Then he moved over and helped Dr. Singleton start the college where I was the chairman of the board for 20 years. And his signature is on both of our college diplomas because he was the college vice president. Dr. Singleton was the president. And then many years later in 1995, 10 years after I graduated from college, I received my doctorate. And he was on that diploma. I have a Master of Divinity between those degrees. And I went to Calvary Baptist Theological Seminary, so different names are on that diploma. But of my four theological diplomas at my high school, his signature is on three of those. 2 years ago, my dear friend, co-worker in Christ and mentor, he passed away of COVID. He died during COVID. Dr. Tetrow invested his life in missions. He invested his life in founding a college, helping me start a seminary when I was there, recruiting kids to go into the ministry, coaching kids in the ministry. He always had tracts in his hand wherever you went with Jerry. You went out to eat. You went wherever. He was always talking about Jesus. He was always giving out a tract. He was always investing himself in God's church. For years, he taught a huge Sunday school class of more senior adults in our church. At one time, when I was pastoring there, there were probably 40 adults in our seniors class, and he was the teacher. And he loved Hebrew, he loved Greek, he was always teaching you about God, he was always telling you about his time with God. He wasn't perfect, none of us are, but he believed in investing himself in God's church. He invested financially, he encouraged people to give financially, not to himself. He and Kit, his widow, is still alive, but they lived an extremely frugal life. When you hear me say things like frugality in industry, not wasting money, not getting three bids on every project. That's all stuff I learned from Dr. Tetrow. He taught me all those kind of things. He would always say to our students, frugality in industry, learn how to have a second job. Be ready to have a second career as well as pastoring. You never know where God may lead you to a smaller church or to a mission work or wherever, but be ready to be frugal and industrious. Dr. Tetrow invested himself when he passed away at 81. Some of his last words were, God's kingdom is great. The need is great. Keep on keeping on. Some of the men that heard him speak for the last time, because he died alone in a hospital with COVID, those are some of the last words that he said to the men, the pastors of Tri-City, was that the need was great, the battle was great, we needed to keep going on. He was a great example to me of how we can invest in a myriad of ways in God's church. Not just financially, although he was a great giver financially. He invested in people. He invested and took time with them. He taught and taught and taught and taught. But I want you to notice, secondly, if you're keeping notes with me, we can invest in God's church, but we can invest in God's people. We can invest in God's people. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 6, it says, "Let him who is taught in the word," that would be you all, you're being taught in the word, "share in all good things with him who teaches." So this is about paying your pastor, paying people that teach you the word. And the famous verse that we use, but sometimes we use it out of context, "Do not be deceived, God is not mocked, for whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh," in other words, if you don't take care of those who teach you, you're actually sowing to the flesh, you reap corruption. But if you sow to the Spirit, you'll reap life everlasting. "And let us not grow weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we don't lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are the household of faith." So while the verse technically, the passage is technically dealing with caring for the ministers, the servants of God financially, there's a broader principle of investing in God's people, and just investing in God's people, not being greedy, not hoarding for ourselves. There are three families I want to tell you about. These are all friends of mine. In the upper corner, the African family, that's the Wambulas. Josiah came to International Baptist College as a 20-year-old single man. And he was working on his undergrad and then his master's. And I had the privilege of being a mentor in his life. And I spent many, many meals with Josiah. One of the most wonderful, godly men I have ever met in my entire life. He spent 3 years at IBC back in the early 2000s. He was a servant. He worked on cleaning the church to help pay his bills. We raised money from donors to give him scholarship. Obviously, he's from Nairobi, from the Nairobi area. This is a picture taken a few years ago when he came back with his family to visit. He went back to Kenya. And he lived an incredibly frugal life. He's a missionary under International Baptist Missions. He lived an incredible frugal life, met this beautiful young woman. They have two beautiful children today. And now he is pastor. He founded a church, got it to the point where it bought land, built a building, and he handed it over to another Kenyan pastor. And he's gone out now and founded another church as a church planner. A few years ago, our mission board director, Larry Ball, went to visit him with their two children. He and his wife and Larry came back and told me, he said, "Do you know that they're giving so much of their money away to help plant this church? With two children, they have no running water and they have no indoor plumbing. They go to an outhouse." And I was taken back by this man's dedication, because he had grown up very poor, came to the United States, knew how wealthy we are, knew the cars we drive, knew the homes we lived in, and he had never once asked me, and I said to Larry, I said, "How much more money a month does he need to live in an apartment that has running water for the health of his babies?" Because they were much younger at the time. He said he needs $50 a month. And he can have an apartment with running water and an indoor toilet instead of living in the slums with his wife and his two babies using an outhouse, pouring water over their head with a pan for a shower. Of course, as wealthy as we are in America, we don't think $50. And I said, "Larry, then we need to raise the fund. We need to raise, Tri-City needs to pay him $50 more a month." Obviously, many churches were supporting him. But that's the level of dedication in investing in God's people that the Wambulas do. The next picture you see is of the Mendozas. Kerry and Arnie met at Maranatha. He's a Mexican national. She's from Texas. And he came to IBC for his master's degree. They were married. They now have two boys. Both their boys have now graduated from IBC themselves. Very gifted musicians. He's been all over Mexico planting churches. He has now started a college just south of Tijuana. And one of their ministries is training good musicians for the Mexican churches. They have a whole gamut of from piano to singing to violin different stringed instruments. And his sons are just very, very godly men. And they've given themselves to God's church in Mexico. In the bottom picture is a man you've heard me talk about. That is Solomon Raju. Solomon now oversees a ministry. This is the man that we've been entrusting to build these six churches for us. Solomon now is the head of a board of many pastors, and they have planted in the last 25 years over 200 churches in India. It was a ministry that my father started. Solomon was reared in our children's home there in India, came to the United States, came to IBM, and like Josiah, worked on the clean toilets, would do anything you asked him to do. He was a single man at the time. And for 2 years, he was with us when the campus was still in Tempe, and I spent many, took him out to lunch over and over again, just pouring myself into him, having conversations about what we could do in India and what he could do in India. He went back, started a church in a larger city. It immediately grew. He was living in abject poverty, found a wife, got married, living in abject poverty. When the opportunity came, they voted him in as the president of all these churches. And now he's just taken it further. They've bought land. They've built a Bible college. They've built an orphanage. He's planting churches and training men who are going out into the most poverty reaches of India, planting churches and sharing the gospel. And that's Solomon. His son is now almost out of high school and wants to go into the ministry like his father did. And these are just some of the examples of men that have given their lives by investing in God's people. And it's such a joy for me to know them. And through the years, whether it's at Littleton Baptist or Tri-City Baptist, that we help support godly people that live sometimes in a way and in a manner that we would never think as Americans, like, how do they live like that? And yet they give away their finances to start a church, to plant a church, to feed a hungry family that they come in contact with. Investing in God's people, you reap the benefits of that. And then lastly, if you're taking notes with me, if asking, is my throat bothering me? Yes, the dust over here is horrific. The wind blows all the time, and dust is in the air. That's why you sometimes see these pictures of the orange sun in the Middle East. It's because the refraction of the light through the sun. And so I drink all the time to try to keep the tickle out of my throat, as it were. But the last thing, when we're talking about investing in that which can never cease, we talk about investing in that which can never cease. We invest in God's church, we invest in God's people, and we invest in God's work. We invest in God's work. Jesus says in Matthew 28, 19 and 20, go therefore and make disciples. That's the command, to make disciples. God's work is making disciples. The last thing Matthew has Jesus saying is go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even the end of the age. The two commands in that verse are to disciple, and then that little word lo is a command. It is from the Greek word edu, and edu means to see or to look at. And it's as if God and Jesus saying, when he tells them to go in and make disciples and baptize the nations and teach the nations, and it's here are these 11 guys, and Peter had denied him, and doubting Thomas hadn't even believed he had resurrected, and John is just a teenager, And I'm sure that 11 of them are kind of looking at each other like, who, us? And Jesus says, and look at me, and lo, look at me, look at me. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Those two commands are make disciples and keep your eyes on me. Make disciples and keep your eyes on me. And lo, I am with you always. And hey, guys, stop looking at each other. Stop looking at the problems. Stop looking at the difficulties. Look at me. I am with you always, even to the end of the age. What a blessing it is that you can say, I'm a part of investing in God's work. I'm a part of investing in God's work. You had the privilege not long ago of hearing Mike Reddick preach, one of my best friends in the ministry. Just an amazing story of how God saved him out of drugs. God saved him from an unsaved home, his wife from an unsaved home. And he was trained as a master chef, making huge money. Back in the late 80s, he was making $100,000 a year. And places like the Hilton and the Hyatt were saying, we'll provide you a car, we'll give you free lodging in our nicest suites and pay you $100,000. And you think back in the late 80s, early 90s, $100,000, no car expense, no housing expense. You're talking a lot of money. And I got to know him when he was working on his master's at IBCS. And he and I have been friends, he and Lisa and Elm and I, since the early 90s, since the late 80s, actually, as I think about it. He's preached all over the world. He and Lisa have such an incredible passion for the souls of men. They're invested in countries that I can't even open source. I can't even tell you where they're ministering in what they call restricted access nations or RAN nations. They're winning people to Christ, and they're training people to go into those nations and win people to Christ all over the world. And here is a couple. She has a master's degree from Harvard, and he has the equivalent of a master's degree in elite chef. The combined salaries they could be demanding today would be $300,000 or $400,000 a year if they had stayed in their career fields. But they chose to invest in God's work. There are churches all over the world, people all over the world that have accepted Christ because of their ministry all over Asia, China, in Singapore, in the Philippines, in Taiwan, in South Korea, in the Middle East, in Indonesia, and the list just goes on and on, in Australia, in New Zealand. They've traveled all over Asia, and they've invested their life in God's work. And you say today, well, Pastor, I can't invest, I can't travel the world and preach. No, but you know what? How we reap a blessing is that as we invest in God's church, individually and corporately, as we invest in God's people, individually and corporately, as we invest in God's work, individually and corporately, our church and us as individuals are going to reap a great blessing this year. As we think about, I'm going to invest in that can never cease. I start off by telling you the story of Lehman Brothers and how it had survived the Great Depression, how it survived World War I, World War II, the Spanish-American War, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the inflation of the 70s. It had survived all of that. And people thought, oh, it's been around 160, 170 years. It's going. I can invest safely with Lehman. I can buy that stock. It's a good investment. It always makes money. It always has a positive return. And in 2008, it ceased to exist. When we invest ourselves in God's church and God's people and God's work, we're investing in that which will never, ever cease. Well, I trust as you think about your investment portfolio, you'll think about making sure you invest in that which will never cease, God's people, God's work, and God's